It's happening more and more these days. Cops are cracking down all across America. If you drive drunk, it's more likely than ever you will get caught and you will be arrested. So don't take any chances. If you're drunk, do not get behind the wheel. And maybe you could avoid feeling like this. Drunk driving, over the limit, under arrest. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Get yourself on the Blues Time. It's the greatest blues show anywhere at noon on Thursday. I'm Mr. White, and I'm so confident you will move and groove to the Blues Time. I will give you worry-free home delivery on your FM radio or streaming to you live over the internet. The old blues, the new blues, the finest grease to slide your feet. So get your free Blues Time, the world's greatest blues show on Thursday at noon. Guaranteed.
Hello and welcome. This is another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Dearborn, Michigan, for those people listening on the internet from Japan or Buenos Aires. Okay, Dearborn, Michigan. Look it up. Google it. Google Map. My name is Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you today. And with me in the studio, Dennis Reimars and Amy Powers. How are you guys doing?
Good. Hi. Hey, Amy. How are you? Didn't see you there.
I'm just fine. How are you, Dennis? How are you, Jay?
Better than
okay.
I deserve.
Did we survive Earth Day yesterday here on campus? We had an event called Earth Stock 2010. Dennis, did you get out there?
I was there. My whole entire family was here, and we had a great time.
Wow. Okay. There was music, and there was some lecture presentation. Weather was a little nippy, but it was beautiful. I learned some new things from some of the vendors that actually were also at EarthStock 2010. Some of the people giving information, some nonprofit groups. Michelle Martinez of Sierra Club Detroit chapter was there. Yeah. Uh huh.
I have to tell you, you were not kidding. She is so knowledgeable.
Yes.
Very nice lady.
Yes, very dynamic. Gave that Sierra Club presentation over a couple weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago on campus here, which happened to include a segment of Climate Croc of the Week. Can we say croc on the air?
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah. You know, a croc is a pot, so it's a climate pot of the week. We said something about marijuana then. No. He has a YouTube site, Peter Sinclair. He's based in Midland, Michigan, and we're expecting an interview, a call-in from him at 1:30 approximately, 1:35 today in our show, about halfway through our show, and we'll be talking to him about the climate croc maybe of this week, as well as what he's going to be reporting, might be the same thing, at Michigan Earth Day. And where is that, you say? Well, it's not in Dearborn. Unfortunately, Rochester, Michigan has got the honor, and the website, miearthday.com, they did have .com there, because they've got a 3-day or a 2.5-day Earth Day festival with music and personal health information, displays by all kinds of people. I think I have somewhere here. Oops. What do I do with it? Okay.
Well, they have speakers. They have events for children to educate kids on the environment.
Mm-hmm. Get the kids going green. You know, that's a good idea to start.
Wear anything they'd like.
Oh, it's one of those then. I see. Free choice. No, but seriously, I mean, I think it's a really good idea to start the kids really young on this stuff.
Yes.
Right, yeah, and it's for the whole family, and so I do want to promote it because there's free admission. I mean, it's just wandering around 3rd and Water Streets in downtown Rochester. They say they have the largest area. The outdoor festival site covers more than 200,000 square feet of lots and roads in their downtown area. It includes more than 50,000 square feet of tent-covered exhibits, walkways, dining area, stages, activity area, seating, and even a petting farm.
I'm in.
I need to be petted, so I got to go there. Okay. Oh, it's for animals,
no, I think
probably.
You, yeah,
animals, pet the small animals. Oh, yeah, non-domesticated. Well, whatever. It says with that much coverage too, folks. Coverage over your heads. You can enjoy the festivities, rain or shine. In fact, when we do talk to Mayor O'Reilly, and we do have him rescheduled, you know, folks, we were expecting him last week, and they had a mess up in the Dearborn Mayor's office of some sort. We're not blaming the mayor, but he sent to Dennis, didn't send it to me, but to Dennis, who was trying to schedule this, a very nice letter saying, good luck with your radiothon. There was no check enclosed. I'm sorry, Mayor, that's just a joke. Just a joke.
But I looked, too.
Yeah, but Amy was looking for that, too, and I didn't even clue her in on that. But that's okay. We know that your support is there, as you said in the letter, and he'll be with us on Friday, May 28th. So unless you go out of town for Memorial Day weekend, you can hear it live here, or it'll be on the podcast. And one thing I want to ask him is, why don't we cover the Bryant library parking lot where the of course the farm market, the Dearborn farm market, happens to be. That would be a real advantage so that people can go shop there in all weather. Now, it's not 50,000 square feet, but it is a nice thing to do. I was also wondering why, since we have Ford Field and there's several covered areas there, why doesn't the farm market happen down there? Is it because the Dearborn businesses of West Dearborn want people to come to the farm market and then maybe have lunch somewhere nearby or shop? I mean, it's a shopping area thing, too.
I think there's two dynamics at work here. One of them is that, if I'm not mistaken, this is the third installment of the farm market, is it not?
I think that's correct.
And it is continuing to evolve. So, I mean, I have a feeling that they have to decide how big this will get before they have a more, I hate to call it more permanent. But
even the vendors I talked to last year, though, said it should start earlier. They were willing to be out there in May. Now, of course, they're still trying to get volunteers, folks, for this in order to help organize it and staff it and get the vendors in place. City of Dearborn, I don't know how much money they're putting up, but it's probably not much. It's being co-sponsored this year by Henry Ford Community College and the Oakwood Hospital Groups.
Awesome.
And so that's good that we've got those two major supporters this year. But there are ways that could be improved. And anyway, to conclude, going back to miearthday.com, the Michigan Earth Day Festival is actually in Rochester, Michigan, not here. It's about 40 minutes from Dearborn. It's up there north of somewhere.
North
off,
of Troy. Yeah.
Off I-75. Take I-75 north and
you can
Rochester
just take I-75 to Rochester Road.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a drive up Rochester Road. It's another 5 or 10 miles,
yes.
But that's the easiest exit to remember if you're going to Rochester. Get off at Rochester Road, I guess. In any event, that's going to be great. A couple of our favored local artists are going to be out there, too, Saturday at 2 p.m., unfortunately, the same time as Peter Sinclair. Jen Siggett, who was here for our pledge drive last Sunday, is going to be out there. And boy, can she sing folk music, original stuff. And on Sunday, Joe Serapair, who we know and love from the Ann Arbor-Ipsy area and has been here several times in this area, is going to be performing at 1 p.m. But what a list of speakers from 12 noon to 4 p.m. Tomorrow, including Peter Sinclair, who we hope to talk to in just a little while on this show.
Well, and admission is free.
Yeah, right. You can wander around, no cost. Admission is free. Bring the whole family, all kinds of activities, several things going on at the same time, so you're bound to find things happening. And it's wonderful to promote that. It's like, unfortunately, it's good for Rochester, Michigan, and not Dearborn. To my knowledge, there was no specific city activity for Earth Day other than Earthstock here at HFCC.
I think you're right.
That's too bad. It's just too bad. Also, one of the people we'd like to talk to, whether we need special permission or not, is Dave Norwood, who is the sustainability coordinator for the city of Dearborn. Our understanding is, it may be wrong, Dave, if you're listening, that you will be presenting a report about what Dearborn could and or should do for increasing its greenness. In fact, sustainability is greenness and how we can reduce cost, efficiency, move towards the future as a city. And that's, I believe, his job, and we believe his report is supposed to be introduced to the City Council of Dearborn in May. So when we get the mayor at the end of May, that report already might be public notice, but I'd like to see how he's moving along on that. The cityofdearborn.org website does ask for local ideas. So you could just email the city as to things they could do to save money and to become more fuel efficient and so on. That'd be a good idea. Now let's turn to the local news as reported in the local papers this week. We could do the whole hour, but why do that? I thought, first of all, just for reference, because we covered the story before, last Sunday's Press and Guide, April 18th, Dearborn Heights Council rejects the police contract. You need to read about that, especially if you live in Dearborn Heights. And the basically, it was 6-1 against, and the reason was basically they thought they didn't have the money. They didn't have the money. And it was really terrible, but, you know, some residents were concerned because the negotiated agreement could raise the Act 345 pension millage. Now, the mayor, Dan Poletko, out there says he's disappointed that the council didn't approve the items. Obviously, he was involved in negotiating. And the mayor said he'll have to wait to talk to the union representatives to know what comes next. So the council people said, oh, it was a tough decision, but we just didn't have the money. Well, things are tough there. And you can read it for yourself. I'm sure sensational is always important. Mayor of Dearborn, O'Reilly, and Hakeem Fakhouri were part of a discussion last Thursday about downtown Dearborn redevelopment. He had a list of extensive demands that he wanted the extension agreement from December changed, which he supposedly had agreed to, although he didn't sign. And the city of Dearborn attorney, Deborah Walling, indicated at that meeting that most all of those provisions are not acceptable to the city. I thought it was interesting if you turn to the coverage of the event in the Times Herald from Wednesday. I think it's page 7A. They buried it a little bit. I don't know why they were. I guess because they didn't scoop the story. they buried a little bit. Investors meeting with officials ends in inaction. And that's what did happen. Nothing happened in either direction. City Council said, well, maybe we'll come up with a proposal back to him. But J. Patrick Pepper, who wrote the story in the lead sentence, he says, the ongoing miscommunication between local businessman Hakeem Fakhouri and city officials was front and center at a public meeting Thursday where both sides say they've had different understandings about why they were even there. So they said it, actually past tense, that they have different understandings about why they were even there. So talk about you can't have a meeting. Yeah, can't have the meeting of the minds if the meeting, the purpose for the meeting was different for both of them. So, duh. And I don't know whose fault that is. But again, the as I said, Corporation Counsel, that is the city attorney, Deborah Walling, indicated, she said, that his proposed changes, which were itemized in last Sunday's Press and Guide, though, could expose the city to potential legal liability, and so just not for it. So I don't think the city can do something that the city attorney says, you know, is legally just a real bad deal for the city. So we're just going to leave it at that, folks. And, you know, there was a cute cartoon about, you know, the battle between Fakhouri and Mayor O'Reilly verbally. You know, in these stories, we don't get any bad language, you know, negative language, just they disagree with each other. And Fakhouri accused O'Reilly of simply calling the meeting to berate him publicly, which is a charge that O'Reilly denied. So there. I mean, Fakhouri wanted the meeting, I think, so the city had the meeting. And I just don't understand. Would you want a private meeting with the city on this issue? I think it's past the privacy time since both sides have been casting, as I see it, not casting, they've been stating their opinions and their wide
through the media
differences through the media for months and months.
Absolutely.
And I'm not saying either side was, I mean, they're still trying to meet, at least. But Mr. Fakhouri has had, I think it's about 5 years now since the initial developer's agreement to further go ahead. Bad economic climate, I know, but if you can't do it, then we need another developer. I think the city has to see it that way. And the guidelines for his development contract are the same for any developer that would come into Dearborn. So I don't you know, I don't want to come. I haven't looked at it in detail. No one should try to decide this who is outside of looking at the intense details and knowing the legal issue. So I don't think either one of them is either right or wrong. The city is acting on the basis of standard operating procedure, I believe. And it may be time to give another developer a chance, is what I believe. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone at Henry Ford Community College, remember, and they didn't tell us what to say here. Okay, I thought the most interesting paper, though, since we only have about 15, 20 minutes more time before we talk to Peter Sinclair in sort of our special Earth Day show here on the new WHFR Journal, station making waves, WHFR.fm, don't you know, and in the Dearborn Pressing Guide from Wednesday, Dearborn's going to get a new trash system. The city, first of all, found out that it could save hundreds of thousands of dollars if they changed from waste management. And my daughter was applauding that waste management did not get the contract this time because, well, one of those little things, when she was living near Oakwood Hospital, waste management truck went out of control, supposedly an accident, and they're very big and heavy, and totally demolished her little car.
Was she in it?
Which was sitting in the driveway, but it just went whoa, up the street, and you know, because the drivers have to jump out to get the the baskets to dump in.
That's was it an older car?
Waste management system. It was a couple years old. It was a Ford Focus.
All right.
And Ford makes good, strong cars, right? It was just completely creamed by this 9-million-ton waste management truck. And supposedly the emergency brake went off or something. Right. I don't know if the driver was, you know, held risk. But and they did pay a small settlement to my daughter. So it's not that they didn't sort of own up to the responsibility. Sure. But they had the cops out there and everybody's taking pictures of this car that was just like it was run over by a tank, you know.
Yeah.
So she just holds a little grudge, nothing personal, but just in general towards waste management.
And well, Republic got it, and I think those trucks are way lighter.
Well, I don't know if they are or not, but they don't require the driver to put the car in park or pull a brake because the driver just pulls up. And this is going to have some people in Dearborn. Apparently, the system has already been tried in Northeast Dearborn, and it works.
It's automated. But
here, let me explain briefly, folks, if you haven't heard about this yet, although it's in the Wednesday Press and Guide, and you'll get information about it from the city, too, in detail. Everybody's going to get 296-gallon carts, that is trash barrels that have wheels on them. Okay, that's about twice as big as the normal 40-gallon.
Right.
Okay, a little more than that. And one is for recyclables, and one is for that other general trash, which still has to be in bags, you know, like trash bags or whatever. But if you need more than that, if you have more of the trash than that, you're going to have to pay for the extra 96-gallon container. So some people, and shame on you for having that much trash. Come on, you
don't
can
point
cut
fingers.
Back.
Could be a big cleaning week, and you know.
You don't know.
You don't know.
Right. And apparently you've got to use these barrels for trash and recyclables. Now, if it's organic stuff, you can still use your old 40-gallon things that you put the labels on for the city of Dearborn. Because they're collected by, maybe it's a different truck or something. So like your leaves and your rakings from your yard and trimmings, that can go into the same 40-gallon containers that you've used before. In any event, they have to be positioned on the curb, not on the street, with the handles towards the house, away from the street, if I read that correctly.
I'm thinking this driver might have to get out of the car after all.
Couple of trips before people get into this, because what they have is the truck pulls up and they have an automated system. Forks come out, an arm comes out, it grabs that trash barrel and dumps it and puts it back down.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's magic.
I'd love to see that, but apparently it works and it's been done other places. But you have to position the barrel in the right location, not too far from the curb and not in the street, and the handle can't be, I think, towards the truck. It would get in the way of the dumping mechanism. But at least one driver can do it all, as long as they're really good at aligning the back of the truck to the curb and getting it.
And if everyone's complied with exactly right, how exactly. to position the
I
baskets.
Wonder if they, yeah. they just say, well, you didn't do it right. I'll get you next week.
There'll be a transition period, no doubt, for that. But the city is saving, I read $300,000 a year.
$363,000.
Yeah, almost $400,000 a year, and it's a 10-year contract. So we'll be getting into that. Slowly, and they'll be delivering the barrels to you, and then I think everybody by mid-July in the city of Dearborn is going to have to do this. Now, the one advantage...
July 5th?
Right. Well, two advantages. One is you get the two barrels for free. So my barrels have got holes in them right now. I mean, they're in bad shape. And I say, I'm going to have to buy a new barrel.
You can stuff it in one of the 96 ounces.
Yeah, I can put away those barrels in the new barrel.
Brilliant,
Amy. Get rid of them.
Oh, my God.
It's very hard to get rid of trash barrels because the other people... Always thought, well, even though they're broken, you can still use them.
Oh, they won't take them. They think.
Well, you'd have to squash them and punch them and
exactly.
stuff them in something else.
At that point, it's recyclable, right?
Right.
So, I mean, we're back where we
started. Well, plastic, not really, but it'll melt down eventually in a couple hundred years. In any event, so you get new barrels. And in the recycling bin, you don't have to separate items.
No.
So paper does not have to be bundled anymore. Mm-hmm. Magazines don't have to be bundled. Really in the new barrels, they still do until the new system comes in. So you can just toss all your glass, all your cans, and all your paper in the recyclable 96-gallon container when you get those new containers. So
but that's every 3 weeks. Remember that. The recycle stuff is only picked up every 3 weeks.
Well, yeah, they don't want it every week, right? It's every 3 weeks? Mm-hmm. That's okay. So you got. I don't know if they're going to tell us dates or you just remember yourself.
I think they're... Yeah, telepathically. No, but
I always feel sorry for the guy right now who jumps out of the truck and has to dump my barrel. And since I was formerly just one person living there, didn't have enough
now
for every week. Well, my daughter's living with me and my granddaughter, which is a fun family. It's almost like 5.5 in terms of trash because of little kids, 2.5-year-old kids go through a lot of stuff.
You're not
anyway,
kidding.
Anyway.
Pointing fingers again.
Yeah, that's
all
right.
It's not Jay.
The opinion's expressed.
So I would only put it out every week or two. I'd wait until the barrel was full, and that's what you should do with recycling, especially for the poor waste management guy who's got to drive the truck and jump out and dump at every house. That's got to be the most exhausting job in the world. I hope they're paying them a lot.
They're in good shape, though.
And then when their emergency brake goes off, look out, here comes that big truck. Anyway, no, just kidding. And so I think it'll be a little bit better for people who do recycling because somehow Republic will do the sorting for you. Right. They have automated machines, robot sorting devices, that
visions
can handle
future.
That. And it's saving this. But that's important for everybody who lives in Dearborn. You got a new system, you have to learn the system, get ready for that a couple months away. A couple of interesting properties in Dearborn have been sold. Interestingly, Henry Ford Estate, I don't know if you want to say it was sold. They don't say sold. It the operation and really control of Henry Ford Estate is transferred to the Ford House, which is, I think it's Edsel Ford's family mansion, is like a museum and has displays that's out in Grosse Pointe, I think, east side of Detroit. And they are now going to take over the Henry Ford Estate slowly over the next couple of years. In fact, the estate will be closed after December of this year briefly while they reorganize and get ideas. And they want to add a museum there. Maybe in the house or separate from it. They want more activities. And very simply, University of Michigan Dearborn, they can't afford it.
Right.
And they don't have they're paying 19 full-time staff people to operate the Henry Ford Estate.
Whew.
19 people. Now, hopefully most of those people or all of them will be hired by the Ford House because they know how to fix the place and what
and
to do with it.
About
some of them
the
might
house.
Be laid off, I bet, and we'll get part-timers coming in. But it sounds like the Ford House has big plans to increase the use and the value of that property. And U of MD can still use it for conferences and special events like Orchestral Society in Dearborn can still use it and so on. So sounds like a pretty good deal. And I think it is really unfair to use state of Michigan taxpayer money on that since just admissions, people do pay admission to the mansion. That doesn't pay for 19 full-time people, much less the electrical bill and the gas or whatever they use over there. I think it's going to be good for them. Interestingly, the Ritz-Carlton Hotel is being sold. And, of course, the Hyatt Regency is up for sale, too. That's around Fairlane Town Center. Apparently, the name Ritz was sort of hurting because people thought, oh, it's really expensive. And apparently, it's not that expensive to stay there. Well, a couple bucks less than the Hyatt was anyway. And so the new owners, and there are already new owners for that, although I don't think there's new owners for the Hyatt yet. Not that the Hyatt is closed, but they're looking for somebody to buy that. And the new owners said, definitely, we're going to change the name because Ritz-Carlton is a name that is copywritten and means something. There's a chain of Ritz-Carlton. And so some amount a month, $5,000 a month, some bill. So they don't want to have to pay for the name, but they also think the name indicates that it's real expensive and the average person shouldn't even consider for a second finding out their prices.
Right.
So they're going to have a new name. They're going to keep it running. Well, that's what they say. Okay. I thought in this article, which actually comes from the Press and Guide, and good for them, they actually sent somebody to Mayor O'Reilly's presentation in front of one of the neighborhood associations. And he does go around and speak in front of neighborhood associations in Dearborn every now and then. I don't think reporters usually follow him for that. But wow, he covered all these topics. He was talking with the Howard Park Neighborhood Association last Thursday.
Well, okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh.
Okay.
I thought carry
that was
on.
Comment. Yeah. Amy and Dennis, just talk among yourselves. It's all right.
Have you seen Jay?
Your mics are on, remember, whatever
I'm
you're
sorry.
Saying.
Okay.
Something about a radio show.
So,
I don't know.
Yeah.
No,
live
I couldn't think
radio.
Of where he was, but I knew he was speaking to
Howard Park, wherever
Howard
that
Park,
is.
The,
and I don't know where that is. But
not what you said.
But one of the details I thought was interesting, the University of Michigan dormitory issue, and they're right next to us here at Henry Ford Community College, and they actually had buildings on campus that were dormitories, supposedly for adult students, and now they're filled with faculty offices, but in any event, adults and their kids, actually, not many, maybe 20, 30 couples, could live on the campus. Now, get this. The U of M D, initially, they thought they could buy the Ritz-Carlton and make it into dorm rooms.
That's an interesting
that would be pretty Ooh. Classy dorm rooms
wow.
right there.
Kind of ritzy.
Town
if you know
but
what I mean.
They didn't get there before the other bidders. They were late in making their bid.
Well, they can still get the Hyatt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's a stone's throw away.
You know, right. Let me ask you this. Didn't the Hyatt went into bankruptcy, correct? The owners? And so it's on the selling block.
It's
for
on the market.
Fraction
I don't know how
the value
yeah, right.
though.
Yeah.
I mean, less than
maybe
half.
We could take up a collection right here at WHFR. And
I got like 46 cents.
Use it as a allied facility for our staff.
Yeah. Adjunct. Or something.
There you
yeah.
go.
Anyway, a study conducted by the university has shown interest in dorms, but the U of M doesn't necessarily want to build on its existing land. They've got land.
Mm-hmm.
Just
why don't they want
up.
To build on their own land? Well, I'm thinking, you know, even as a bicyclist in that, and some of our students, trying to cross the street there, Evergreen.
Oh, my. Yeah.
It's very busy, you know. And to put the dorm students over there, what do they have to drive their cars?
Well, let's get another monorail
across?
Going.
Oh,
you know?
Geez.
Yeah, let's ask Ford to build another monorail that can't be used in the winter. Yeah. They used to have a monorail there, folks, when they first opened the Hyatt. And Ford thought, oh, we're going to get into urban transportation in terms of money. And they came up with a car-based model and an elevated highway that with these little teeny rubber tires on the little cars that couldn't go anywhere as soon as it snowed or iced in Michigan, which it does all the time in Michigan winters. So that was the stupidest design. Whoever in Ford thought that, well, we'll just make them like little cars. So, duh. This is so stupid. Of course it's not going to work. And the model was here in Dearborn, you know, which immediately was shown to be bogus and ineffective. But the mayor said that U of M D, getting back to the school's dorms, is considering building dorms across Evergreen behind TGI Fridays.
Hmm.
So that's real convenient. Good incentive for the kids to go drink at happy hour right behind TGI Fridays. Again, they got to cross the road, though, and they got to buy the property. I don't understand why they don't have property of their own to donate, to give to this. You know, I just don't. Doesn't, I'm sorry, now we'll have to contact U of MD and find out what's going on in their thinking. Why does it have to be that distance away that sort of demands the dormitory students drive their cars back to the school? Shouldn't they have to? I thought the whole idea of dorms was that they wouldn't have to drive. They wouldn't need a car in order to go to school there. I don't understand.
Are you saying they'd need a car to drive from near TGIF Fridays to
But there's
campus?
No sidewalk. There's no crossing.
Well, I mean, if they're doing all
They'd
this.
Have to walk all the way down to Henry Ford Community College or the light, and there's no sidewalks around Fairlane Town Center
right now, but
to walk on.
I'm sure that you don't
that
think
be
that's
part of the infrastructure
just for one building?
I'm just looking at the land that they have there. A lot of that is protected. I mean, it's all the beautiful conservancy land in the back. And then of course it borders the Henry Ford Estate there.
Well, they have large lots that now they've put trees on. I mean, large lot right next to their buildings.
Right.
And now they were all grass before, but they decided to put trees in there. And good for them. You know, more trees the better in this world. But and in fact, so they've declined or they've chosen not to allow like student groups to play soccer or whatever on these. But they've got open areas now. Whether or not they can run their utility lines over to them. But they've got the land for a couple of large, especially if they're high-rise, buildings. It is my personal opinion they do. Not like Henry Ford Community College, where we don't have an extra speck of land for anything over here. And think, you know. But in any event, I thought it was interesting, TGI Fridays, but they're still not talking about a walking overpass or a bridge or...
Where did you... You went to Michigan State, correct?
No, I went to U of M Ann Arbor. Okay. And Oakland University undergrad.
But when you had to go to classes, and it was very common for you to have to take your bike because it was too far to walk. Would you
No,
agree
I
that?
Walked everywhere.
Did
I
you?
Walked like an hour or two sometimes from South Campus, South Quad up to... I didn't have to get to North Campus, which is sort of a free bus trip. The university runs a bus. So I think walking is good, and of course...
Well, this is a lot shorter of a walk, and if they would fix the evergreen part of it that you're talking about, I think it would be a really good idea. What happened to the old Quality Inn that they were talking about? I know that right now there's a lot of cars parked there from the...
Yeah, and the Fakuri plan was going to have dorms
Didn't that make
further
the most
down.
Sense? Using the old hotel
it's
as a
still
dorm?
Pretty far away for walking.
Well, it's
know.
About...
But
about,
there's the bike path.
It's about a mile on the
there's
bike path.
There's the bike path, you know, but winter... Oh, they do clear that in the winter.
We take our dog there year-round. So,
I phone just, call coming in. I think it's our special guest
Saved by the Bell.
For the day. Hi, this is WHFR Radio. Jay speaking.
Nah, we should just go.
Yes, we'd love to talk to you about, your appearance at Earth Day coming up, which we've already talked about a little bit on the show here, and also the current climate crock of the week. So just wait a second. We'll put you right on the air live, and we will let you go in 20, 25 minutes, okay? All right, hang on. There he is, folks. Hang up. Do some
live, not in person.
Amazing mechanical tricks here. So, Peter Sinclair, you're on the air with WHFR Radio. So, you're at your home in Midland, Michigan right now?
That's correct.
Okay. Maybe you could tell our listeners. Now, we're familiar with you here at Henry Ford Community College. You've been one of our main speakers at our Environmental Summit presentations, both last year and this year. And so we've heard of you, and in fact, you and I recorded a very brief little interview 2 years ago at that first summit, which we put on this radio station. But go ahead, be unhumble. Tell our listeners your background, your credentials, and how you got involved with the environmental issues that you're very active in now.
Well, credentials would not exactly be the right description. I've what I do is that I've been a graphic artist for a long time. I've also been a person who's been interested in the Great Lakes, in our larger environment, and the basic idea of having a livable planet for a long time. I followed the issue of climate change over many, many years, and what it occurred to me is missing is that we've got all these brilliant scientists who have been working on this for decades and decades, but communicating what they're trying to tell us, communication has not been their strong suit. And because it's a complex topic and it's hard to understand. And so I decided to apply some of my skills in terms of communication to getting this message out. And to do that, I had to actually begin talking to the people who are doing the actual research. And I was fortunate enough about 3 years ago to get invited down to Nashville by Al Gore and introduced to a number of the leading climate specialists. And that began an education process that still continues, but it has allowed me to talk directly to the people who are doing the science and challenge them to, you know, tell me the story in language I can understand. Mm-hmm. And then they challenge me to get it right.
Yes, I have to give you a lot of credit for the clarity of your presentations. In fact, Michelle Martinez of the local Detroit, one of the local Detroit chapters of Sierra Club, actually used one of your sort of PowerPoint-like Climate Croc of the Week segments for one of her presentations a couple of weeks ago down here at Henry Ford Community College.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just part of her presentation, but it was, again, I thought, very effective and very clear. You're not one of the problems with any of these debates that get sensationalized by certain cable TV news channels is that they start, you know, doing character assassination, really, and making wild exaggerations of what are the scientific facts. And I don't think you should be at all unhumble about your credentials, which is a film producer, a video maker, graphic artist. You're ideally suited to try to put together information that you have to research. I mean, a good documentary filmmaker has to do good research or the documentary is going to be bad. You know, we talked live last week. It was our once a year pledge drive with Seth Shostak. We feature his show, Are We Alone, every week on WHFR. He doesn't charge us anything, but it's a very great science show, which summarizes and popularizes many topics in science, usually related to outer space and science exploration and so on. But no, I personally happen to, you know, I want to commend you. I think you're doing a very fine job in getting the message out, and I'm sure people will be looking forward to hearing you make that your latest presentation tomorrow in Rochester, Michigan, at their Michigan Earth Day Festival, 2 o'clock. We've told people already.
That's correct.
Yeah, and that looks like a great festival. Have you been part of that before?
I was there last year, and, uh-huh. and it's great fun. I tell people, you know, you don't even have to like the Earth. You can hate the Earth, and you can go for the brats. You know, it's just
right.
great fun.
Right.
And let me just plug the videos that you talked about a little bit.
Sure. I wanted to mention, by the way, Peter, to you at least, both Amy Powers and Dennis Reimars, who are WHFR news team support for this show, they're here in the studio too. So if they raise their hand politely, I will let them ask a question as we get going a little more. But
yes, we'll call upon them.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay.
We
Whoops.
Never get called on.
Amy, we didn't have your mic
Sorry.
On. There. Okay.
She was that's a joke another about, trick.
About how,
he's good.
How
he
polite
is
she
really
is.
Really good.
And we try to be respectful of everyone here. But go ahead. You were talking.
Well, I'll plug the video series.
Yes.
I started on YouTube about a year ago. I'll tell you how it evolved. We all came away from Nashville with Al Gore's slideshow, which is basically, if you've seen his movie, then...
Inconvenient Truth.
Yeah, if you've seen Inconvenient Truth, that's the slideshow that we got.
Okay.
And I wasn't happy with that because I had to sign all kinds of legal documents that I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. And, you know, I love Al Gore, great guy, but I didn't want to be tied into his organization in a restrictive way. So I set about making my own material, and since I got the chops to do it, it was, you know, easier for me than most. And researching the science, and what I kept coming across were these sort of crunchy little nuggets of disinformation that I call the climate crocs. You know, there's global warming on Mars, you know, water vapor's doing it, why, you know, there was more carbon in dinosaur times, and so therefore everything's okay, and blah, 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 down the line. So all of these things, I have just taken it upon myself to refute them. The reason they're effective is that Joe Schmo Drive Time DJ can say one of these things in 15 seconds, but it takes an honest climate scientist a half hour or an hour to refute them, you know, both because it's complex science and because they're not always the best communicators. So I said, I'm going to make 5 or 10 minute videos that will take these things one by one and break them down. They'll use the best science. It'll make it obvious where the science is coming from so anyone can check it. And it will be clear, it will be funny, it will be entertaining, and we'll cut through the noise on YouTube, and we'll really go after these things.
Yeah, and that's available, of course, youtube.com/user/greenman3610, if I'm correct.
Right, or if you just search Google Peter Sinclair or Google Climate Crocs, Climate Denial Croc of the Week, Climate Croc, or any combination thereof, you will come to many, many, many hits on there. There's more than 30 of these videos now, and they have become a bit of a thorn in the side of the denial sphere. If I read my email correctly.
Yeah, I read some of the Yahoo comments on your site, and there's a lot of Yahoos out there, apparently. No, I mean, not Yahoo, it's YouTube comments after they view it.
Well, there's Yahoos commenting on YouTube.
Well, I'm sure that's true, too. It is possible, folks, if you do have a YouTube account, to just click on subscribe at Peter Sinclair's Greenman 3610 site, and then they'll automatically be, I guess, notified, if not downloaded, when you have a new video up there. So
that's right. You'll get a little notification.
Okay. So Amy now has a question for you. Go ahead.
Peter, when you were talking about the YouTube series, one that really caught my eye, because there's been so much discussion lately on these hacked or stolen emails from, is it the University of East Anglia?
Sure.
Could you talk a little bit about that? Because I thought the YouTube video that you had done to address the hacked email, particularly the one that noted, the fact is we can't account for the lack of global warming at the moment. And
sure.
It's a travesty that we can't, which, you know, Fox News ran with and a variety of other outlets that continue to just address, you know, a portion of the paper or email that was hacked into.
Sure. Well, let's talk about it a little bit. I have two videos devoted to that process, Climate Croc Facts Hack Attack, Part 1 and 2. And but let's walk our way into it a little bit. Criminals hacked into the email server of the University of East Anglia, which is a well-known climate research organization in the UK. And they pulled out amongst probably hundreds of thousands or millions even of emails over the last 10 years. They pulled out 1,000 or so emails and cherry-picked those for quotes that they felt could be taken out of context and read as if there was some damaging information there. And then that was dispersed through the usual suspects on talk radio and Fox News and this and that. And the one that you mentioned is treated in the video. It's been bandied around quite a bit. Kevin Trenberth, who is a world-renowned atmospheric scientist and one of the contributors to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, wrote in an email that, I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the quote right in front of me, but something to the effect that we can't account for the lack of warming at the moment, and it's a travesty that we can't. And so the way this was put out there is that, well, here you have a scientist who doesn't even believe in global warming, doesn't think that we have the science to indicate that there even is global warming, and it's all a big lie, and it's all a big travesty. Well, what the video does is put that in a little bit of context of what the actual email says in its entirety and what he is referring to. And that basically is that we have a steady rise in temperature that is unambiguous and unequivocal over the last century or so, and certainly over the last 30 or 40 years. Within that rise, we have jiggles and bumps and dips, and just like any chaotic process. And we had an uptick in 2005. We had an uptick in 2007. We had a little down blip in 2008. And that was at the time that Dr. Trenberth was writing. And we were in the middle of a La Nina event in the Pacific, which is a well-known phenomenon that causes global temperatures to dip temporarily. And what he was referring to was a paper that he had written, which was very clear that since we're having global warming, wouldn't it be nice if we had better instrumentation, better observation over the whole planet so that we know we can better track the heat that is coming in? Because satellites tell us very clearly that more heat is coming in from the sun than is being allowed out by the greenhouse gases. We know that heat is building up in the atmosphere, in the oceans in particular, but we don't always know, we aren't able to track every calorie of heat and know exactly where it's going from moment to moment. So Dr. Trenberth said, where is this heat? Is it being buried in the deep oceans? Is it going into melting polar ice? Is it just going into raising sea levels? What is happening with all this heat? Just because we can't measure it on our surface temperature thermometers at the moment does not mean that heat is not in a positive mode and continuing to build up. It just means that it is being absorbed and moved around by the global system in different ways from moment to moment, month to month, year to year.
Okay. So really, they just sort of selected a couple of emails from a couple of people at the University of East Anglia and exaggerated the statements to be all-inclusive of the whole issue.
Maybe. Oh, sure. Certainly. Right. They took it completely out of context.
When we say they, we're talking about certain cable TV news channels.
Exactly. Well, yes. This is a very, very, very well-organized movement that's been in process for 20-some years. We really have a kind of an anti-science, anti-fact political movement in this country that's kind of astounding. Mm-hmm. And it's perfectly possible to live in the media universe where those weapons of mass destruction are still out there. President Obama was born in Kenya. And there's no such thing as global warming.
Sure. Yeah, well, of course, the media are mostly, not WHFR, but the media are mostly driven by a commercial motive, a profit motive. They need to make things simple and as controversial, that is, as sensational as possible. There's a lot of, and I can comment on this, Peter, because I've been a telecom professor, a researcher, well, of course, at community colleges, we're mainly teachers, but we got to do a lot of research to get the teaching right. And I have to say about the media, and you know it too from your experiences and doing research, is that the commercial media tend to sensationalize and try to simplify things for temporary ratings gains. And anything they can hang on to exaggerate. And I don't see them doing the research. Of course, they're not scientists either, but anybody can do the research, but it is a complex issue. I think Al Gore's movie, is a place to start, even though, okay, it's a couple years old now, but it's a place to start, and then you've got to do reading and keeping up. I'm looking at something that I happened to download just this morning that I wasn't aware of, the U.S. Department of Commerce, that's right, our own government at work, their National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, their climate services, last July issued a report, well, it's basically called Talking Points, about whether the U.S. temperature record is reliable. In other words, temperature's going up. And they meet a number of questions. It's a four-page document that I guess you can download from the U.S. Department of Commerce. No doubt about it, according to them, it looks like temperatures are going up, and that will be bad for all kinds of specific consequences, like the oceans going up higher, and places like New Orleans going to get flooded, and this may be over 20 years or 50 years or 100 years, but it's looks like that's coming. Now, of course, that's something that the average person, I'd like to get onto a couple specific issues in the time we have remaining here with you. The average person doesn't think that's a big concern for them necessarily, because they won't be alive maybe when all of the consequences hit. As I was mentioning to Michelle Martinez on campus here yesterday, going green or getting more energy efficient and polluting less and contaminating our planet less has very immediate consequences for a lot of us too. Maybe even being able to save money and find new jobs for ourselves. Wouldn't you agree that whether the climate is getting warmer or not, there's all kinds of other reasons for beginning a new kind of behavior pattern?
Well, I think I am going to focus on what the solutions are and what the positive implications of the solutions are in my talk tomorrow in Rochester.
Okay, good.
But just to, you know, flesh it out a little bit, wouldn't it be nice if we could jump in our car and drive down the road and not feel like the energy that we're using is directly going to subsidize people that hate us and want to kill us?
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, every time I pull up to the gas station and I see a half a dozen other people pulling the nozzle out, putting it in their tank, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, there's got to be a way that we can stop doing this. And in fact, I just heard this morning a survey of returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan. Three-quarters of them support action on renewable energy and climate change, if nothing else, to get us off of this addiction to fossil fuels that come from the Middle East.
That has sort of caused us, or might have been underlying or even subconscious motive for keeping our presence over there in order to keep the oil flowing, you know?
There's
and therefore putting them in harm's way, I might say.
Yeah. Sure. You would have to be, blind to think that we're there for any other reason than because there's a massive oil supply over there. But that's a whole other issue.
Yeah, I know.
But here in Michigan, we have a special interest in this because of the auto industry and because of the impending launch of the Chevy Volt, which is going to be, I predict, one of the watershed technological achievements that people will look back on 20 years from now and say that's when the average guy on the street really started to get it about how great a benefit this is going to be. This is a car that has a EPA mileage rating of, 238 miles per gallon?
Yep, if you do a lot of city driving, yep. And of course, the Nissan Leaf is supposed to be limited availability this fall. That's all electric. Of course, GM could have got started with electric in the 90s, and they backed out of that EV1 thing, so that a little embarrassing to point that out, but
and probably one of, and I think they will admit that was probably one of the greatest blunders that they ever made. Maybe one of the greatest technological, industrial blunders.
Now they could, if they would have kept developing, they could have been the number one electric car company in the world.
You know,
they could have.
Yeah.
But that's too advanced thinking for a large corporation. I think obviously status quo is important to them, but if you wanted to keep that market share,
clearly they've had a near-death experience here.
To say the least. We wanted to get your comments since locally there's been a lot of talk actually on WDET also this week, our other non-commercial but NPR station, about Fermi 2, as they're calling it. I call it Fermi 3. I was around in the 60s, and I know how we almost lost Detroit, as John Fuller's famous book indicated back in, I think it was 66.
Yeah.
And also coal plants. Aren't they both moving ahead through regulatory commissions right now? And isn't that, aren't they both a potential economic danger, or economic and ecological danger?
Well, here's my take. I have had a number of conversations with people high up in the hierarchy of CMS Energy, Consumers Power, which is the utility in my neck of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also talked to some nice people from DTE. And I think that there's a lot of people that work for these companies that want to do the right thing. They see that we're running into kind of crunch time in terms of environment and a number of other issues. And they have a set of arguments about, you know, why they want to do what they want to do. My take is that I would like to see them turn away from the large central power plants that they have in mind, both coal and nuclear, for the precise reason that I want them to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my reasoning. We're in a transitional period here. Over the last 50, 60, 70 years, these utilities have always proceeded on the model that we're going to use more and more and more electricity year by year by year, decade by decade. For the first time now, we're looking ahead in Michigan. Both DTE and Consumers Power are projecting electrical growth that will be flat at best, if not declining.
Mm-hmm.
For a number of reasons, not just the economy, but also because we've reached kind of technological saturation points, and our machinery, particularly things like air conditioners, are getting so much more efficient.
Right.
Every time somebody buys a new air conditioner, it's 40% more efficient than the last one they had, and so we're kind of topping out in terms of the amount of electricity that we need. Now, to build these gigantic power plants, they must raise rates. They will flat out tell you, absolutely, in all honesty, yeah, they're going to raise
across,
rates.
Across billions.
Sure. The only argument is how much will they raise rates. Now, here's my question to you. When you have a commodity that is in flat or declining demand, and you raise the price of it, what does Economics 101 suggest will happen?
Of course, the demand should go down.
The demand will go down.
Just like when gasoline prices go up, people will find ways to use less gas.
That's right.
Or purchase smaller vehicles.
Or purchase smaller vehicles, right. Mm-hmm.
So the risk
carpool.
That they are running here is that they raise rates, they lock themselves into these gigantic loans to build these things, they raise rates, and their revenue stays flat or goes down. They raise rates again, their revenue goes down again. Pretty soon, these flagship Michigan corporations will be in the death spiral. They'll be circling the drain, just like the auto industry. And that is the last thing that we need as we're trying to pull out of a recovery.
Yeah, we only have another minute or so. We've got to wrap up here, Peter, and
sure.
We only promised to keep you until about 2 anyway. But it seems to me, why wouldn't they want, again, it's a change in their business plan or their own vision for their company, but why wouldn't they want to become the number one solar and wind power provider? I mean, maybe they have to, you know, maybe wind farms or even in terms of retrofitting homes. I mean, they are always into they used to be into energy audits and that. Couldn't they sort of transform their company into the new direction and become, because even solar requires maintenance and upkeep on the individual homes and so on. Why let new companies come in if you've already got that business acumen and your website and all that? I mean, I don't understand how business people have to keep the same model. It's just that conservative thinking, and in the future, we've got to make these changes, right? I mean, oil is limited, coal is dirty and hazardous to miners, and efficiency of energy is going to be happening anyway, although people could do more, I think. Doesn't make sense to me. So, as I said yesterday on Earth Day here, we had a little what we call Earth Stock presentation done by a student group on campus and so on, is that all of us just need to find, all of us really, a new behavior, a new system, and just start doing some small things. But if everybody did some small things to save energy, use less, we'd be so much better off. Do you have a couple of, just to conclude, a couple of specific ideas, maybe some new ideas that just popped into your head about what people could do locally? I know there's probably a list of hundreds of things, but...
Well, there are hundreds of things, and most of the things are simple. You know, if did you just, have you bought a new water heater lately? Congratulations, you're helping with the climate crisis, because it's probably more efficient than the old one that you had. Even if you weren't looking for specifically an efficient unit, have you replaced your furnace? Great, you're going to save a whole lot of money, and you're helping the climate crisis.
And there's tax credits eventually for that stuff, too. So sure. Still local, statewide and federal, maybe even, right?
Look around your home, investing in efficiency will get a better return than just about any other financial instrument you can come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And why not? In this time of economic crisis, why not put your money where it's going to give you the biggest return and create jobs in your community? So, win, win, win all the way down.
Yeah, well, thank you for your time today, and we do, recommend that people check out your YouTube site, Green Man 3610, and hopefully they can get up to Rochester to see you tomorrow at their Earth Day Festival in downtown Rochester. 2 o'clock for you, but the festival, I think, starts 11 in the morning or so,
sure. And
is also there on Sunday, too. So
Yeah, right. It's a great fun. Come on out.
Well, we hope we can catch you the next time around. Thank you very much for your time today.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks for being on WHFR.FM. Bye-bye. Okay, that was Peter Sinclair, and he is a well-known activist here in the state of Michigan. He does great summary and very science-based information. He's not a scientist himself, he mentioned that, but by golly, he is a very capable, competent popularizer for people that need to try to understand these complex issues. I don't know if Amy and Dennis have comments. We have one or two other things we could mention here, but we really can't. We're coming to the end of the time, waiting for Highway 61 and Joanne Kay to come back on the air.
And we raised our hands so nicely.
Well, you did anyway.
You did.
Yeah, Dennis, I just turned his mic off and let him stew there.
It's better this way. Mm-hmm. I was impressed with him a lot. What were you going to say, Amy? I'm sorry.
No, just his and the YouTube series, if you're not reading any, more background about him, but the YouTube series on climate denial, Crack of the Week, is, they're probably 5 to 7 minutes in length. They're they really do show both sides. They're in-depth and sharp.
I love the thought process that went into them, where he was just like, look, I have to battle some misunderstanding here. I'm going to make it entertaining. I'm going to make it funny. And they are. I mean,
Well, they're entertaining in the, in the way of, here are the facts that were presented, and we're going to do something a little different and explore the whole story.
Right.
That sort of.
What you have to do when there's a crock.
I love that. As we're waiting for Highway 61 to get started here, we might go a little past the end of our time. I know it's 2 o'clock. This is WHFR Dearborn. Amy, you actually went to a presentation last night about really a famous person, might even become a historic person, in the euthanasia, on the euthanasia issue. A new movie that HBO is premiering. Is it Saturday?
Tomorrow. Sunday, 9 o'clock.
Saturday, 9 o'clock on HBO. You Don't Know Jack, which is true for most of us. I wish most of us would realize that and go out and do some original research. But you went to a local premiere. Tell us about the movie. It has been reviewed in the New York Times and thought to be very well done, very powerful. Tell us about the premiere and what your thoughts are about Jack Kevorkian.
Well, a quick a little...